Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, what jellyfish teach us about beauty, biology, and not burying the adventure of life too deep. Science writer Julie Burwald has spent a lot of time contemplating that deep, the ocean deep, because that's where jellyfish reside. You'll find them bobbing in the Black Sea, glowing in the waters off Japan, and frightening swimmers out of the ocean and onto beaches all over the world. Julie writes in her new book, "To some, jellyfish symbolize the monster, not only in their potentially lethal sting, but also in a more global sense, as a symbol of ecosystem demise. At the same time, jellyfish are utterly breathtakingly beautiful." As we begin, I think it would be interesting to hear from you on that. Have you had an encounter with a jellyfish? Find them beautiful or monstrous? What are you curious about when it comes to jellyfish and ocean ecology? 651-227-6000 to tell me about your encounters or your questions about jellyfish and the ecosystem. 800-242-2828. And I'm on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Julie Burwald is a scientist and a science writer. Her new book is titled Jellyfish, The Science of Jellyfish and the Art of Growing a Backbone. And she's with us today from Austin, Texas. And Julie, welcome. I've been eager to talk to you. I love the book. So good to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Carrie.
Okay, is this going to sound weird if I tell you that I think of jellyfish as the new bees? You know, there was a time I was afraid of bees, and now I want them everywhere in my backyard, and I appreciate the role that they serve in the ecosystem, and maybe jellyfish are a little like that.
I kind of love that analogy. I think that's a very, it's a great way to think about jellyfish. They have both that, that terrifying part. They sting. Well, they both sting, bees and jellyfish.
Right.
And yet, yeah, they're really important to the ecosystem in ways that we're only now beginning to understand. And also the things that we're doing to this planet are changing them sort of in fundamental ways. And, you know, it's time for us to sort of become aware of that. So I love the analogy.
You write, and I think you've alluded to this now, that even scientists, not just average Americans or people of the planet, have taken jellyfish for granted, but scientists have taken them for granted too. Why?
Yeah, it's really interesting. They've been systematically neglected through most of the 20th century. And the reason why is because once we sort of developed motors and nets and winches and boats to go study the ocean, we started studying the ocean very quickly and with a lot of, you know, force. And jellyfish just don't handle that kind of treatment. So when we would pull up nets and dump them out on the back of a boat and sort of sort through what was there, the jellyfish wouldn't make it. And so our understanding of the ocean became biased towards things that are quite durable, hard, things with bones and shells. And jellyfish just became neglected for most of the 20th century. Yeah. It's just not your everyday person. It's all of us.
Right. And I think you've said something here to understand about this as well, that they are prolific. I mean, we find them everywhere. And they tend to, I think when we see them, you know, it feels like a jellyfish invasion. When we see them in a bay or something where people are swimming, it seems like we're being overrun by jellyfish. There doesn't seem to be scarcity. And I think often when we think about valuing something naturally, we think about scarcity with that.
Yeah, and that's where the metaphor with the jellyfish kind of falls apart. I mean, with the bees, the honeybees, or the bees that pollinate.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of falls apart because a lot of the things that we're doing to the planet are improving the situation for the jellyfish. So things like warming the ocean, some jellyfish, specifically the ones that we find often swept up onto beaches, reproduce faster in warmer water. The coastal development that we've created all along our coastlines. The jellyfish, the medusa is just one part of the jellyfish. Mm-hmm. And there's this polyp stage That's just as important to the animal, and it needs to be glued onto a hard surface, and it actually likes to live upside down. It's kind of like a sea anemone, but it likes to live with its tentacles hanging downwards. And in nature, there aren't that many overhanging spaces for it to attach to, but docks and jetties and oil rigs and gas platforms, those sorts of things, provide great habitat for the polyp stage. And then ocean acidification is a big question. You know, we've put a bunch of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and when that mixes with water, it forms carbonic acid, which is a weak acid, but it does dissolve shells. And so jellyfish, because they're shellless, may be able to handle that acidification better than things like oysters, which are certainly taking a hit. And then overfishing, you know, we've really let overfishing get out of control in the ocean, and there's a lot of illegal fishing. And when we pull out, it's estimated that 90% of the big fish are gone from our oceans now. And that leaves a hole for jellyfish because they often eat the same thing as fish. And so they're competing with them, and they actually fish. It looks like a lot of fish eat jellyfish. So with fewer fish around, there's fewer predators as well.
And more food and then for the them, last, right?
Yeah, yeah, the last piece is our ship traffic and building canals all over the world, which jellyfish can come into new habitats in the ballast water of ships. And they can also travel through, you know, canals like the Suez Canal, which was just enlarged last year. And there's an enlargement of the Panama Canal also just happening. And so, you know, we've created ways for jellyfish to move around the world and become invasive species. We've done a lot of things that have helped out with the jellyfish.
Yeah, Julie, we got a call from Trevor in New London who says, I used to be a charter captain in Alaska and I would do overnight trips. He says, one night in a bay, I saw this glowing in the water hundreds of yards wide. And when I got close, I looked over the boat edge and saw millions of tiny jellyfish about the size of a quarter. Now, would those have been the polyps or were they fully developed jellyfish?
Yeah. So if they're swimming, they're the medusa. The polyps will be living on a hard surface.
Okay.
So, yeah, he got into a jellyfish bloom, and jellyfish glow. It's one of their amazing superpowers. And in fact, we've harnessed that glow for biotechnology. And it's really revolutionized the way that we understand how cells function. That's kind of a longer story. But yeah, I mean, I'm really jealous because that must have been an incredible sight.
For as many jellyfish as you've seen, you're jealous.
I am. Yeah,
here's Jeff on Twitter who says, I was stung by both a jellyfish and a bee on the same day in Hawaii.
Poor guy.
And I still like them both. Oh, Jeff.
Yeah.
Good for him. I don't know if you've been stung. I can't remember the memoir whether you've actually ever been stung by a jellyfish. What's it feel like?
Yeah, I dove. You know, it's funny. I chased the jellyfish around in the memoir. The second half of the of the book becomes kind of a little bit of a travelogue where I'm trying to find these. Initially, I try to find these giant jellyfish that grow to be 500 pounds off the coast of Japan.
That's right.
And yeah. And the one thing about jellyfish is you just can't predict where and when you're going to find them. And so when I was there, it was predicted that there would be a huge bloom of these things. They're super interesting. In the 20th century, they only appeared about every 30 years. So it was the kind of thing that a fisherman would tell their son, you know, there was the year of the giant jellyfish. Look out for that. But now in the 21st century, they've appeared every single year. And it's probably a combination of pollution and warming and some overfishing that has allowed them to proliferate. So anyway, I went to Japan to try to find them, and I only found two of them, but I got stung by it, and it wasn't too bad. It feels like a bee sting. It feels kind of like a wasp sting.
Okay, yeah.
No, it's not too bad. And then I went to Israel, and that's where I got into a big bloom of very stinging, kind of a bad stinger. It's called the nomadic jellyfish, and it's invaded into the Mediterranean from the Indian Ocean through the Suez Canal and found really hospitable, warm waters there because the Eastern Mediterranean has warmed because of global warming. And now this jellyfish can form these massive blooms tens of miles wide, and they actually get swept into power plants, and then they have to stop the operations. Power plants suck in seawater to cool their machinery, and these jellyfish clog all of that up. And so they're a menace, a big problem. But anyway, I really wanted to see them in the water, and I dove into a bloom of them with someone as a guide to kind of make sure I didn't get stung too badly. And yeah, it does. It feels like a swath of wasp sting.
Jeez.
But you know, the thing about jellyfish stings, well, the stinging cell itself is this extraordinary biological adaptation. It's really the most amazing cell I've ever read about. And it fires a micron-sized needle into you with an explosion that's 5 million Gs. So like when if you just drop a pencil down onto a table, that's 1 G. And if you like watch a Ferrari accelerate, that's 3 Gs. And the jellyfish's stinging cell accelerates with 5 million of those. So 5 million times faster than you drop a pencil, which is amazing. And it since it's a micron-sized needle, it goes away pretty quickly. But anyway, and actually, it's pretty interesting. There's some people who are studying whether we can use those stinging cells as a way to deliver drugs below the surface of the skin, because you can inject below that waxy cuticle and get down into the lower epidermis and deliver drugs along with the stinger, and it's painless. At that point, if there's no toxin, if you're just using drugs and no toxin.
Julie Burwald is with us. She's a scientist and a science writer, and she's the author of Spineless, The Science of Jellyfish and the Art of Growing a Backbone. So there's a lot of memoir in this book, too, also about these fascinating insights into the science of jellyfish. So I want to know, as Julie and I talk, whether you've had an encounter with a jellyfish, perhaps like our caller, Trevor, who was in Alaska, and he looked over the side of a charter boat and he saw all these tiny jellyfish, or maybe you've been stung. Do you find them beautiful or monstrous? And what are you curious about when it comes to jellyfish science? Because isn't everybody? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and to the phones to Christine in Lake Elmo. Christine, have you had an encounter with a jellyfish?
Well, I think it was sort of a surreal encounter with many, many of them. And we were, we have a sailboat, and we were over off the coast of Ithaca in Greece. Mm. And we looked down, and our boat was literally surrounded by what they call fried egg jellyfish.
Mm.
And they look like egg yolks, fried eggs, and hundreds of them. It was really hot. They didn't feel like jumping in the water.
And they didn't glow or anything, or maybe since it was daytime, you couldn't tell. But
right.
they had a center like an egg yolk.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those are such cool jellyfish. I'm so glad you got to see a big swarm of them like that. They are actually, they have an algae that lives in their tissues and as a symbiont and photosynthesizes. And so they use some of the sugar that the algae makes as part of the way they get food. And they're actually, you know, in Italy and Greece and those regions, the jellyfish numbers are really up. And so the chefs around there are really interested in seeing about if you could eat them and, you know, to develop a fishery around jellyfish. And it turns out that those fried egg jellyfish are very nutritious and very high in antioxidants. And and the chefs are really, yeah, there's every year in Milan, there's sort of an expo where they talk about art and food and culture. And the fried egg jellyfish have been a big favorite of the chefs talking about novel foods.
Okay, so Julie, I wanted to ask you about this because I saw a scientific estimate this summer that found that there are four times as many jellyfish in the Mediterranean now as there were just 13 years ago. And I was reading what the scientist who's who is looking at what that means for the biodiversity of the Mediterranean, what he was saying, Silvio Greco. And he really demonized the jellyfish. He said, the sea is full of them, and it's a big problem for biodiversity. He said, humans have to hunt jellyfish if we're going to restore any kind of a balance. Is that right? It's up to us to eat more of them and get them out of the sea if it's going to be more balanced? I hear you sighing.
It's a really tricky problem. Yeah, I've heard scientists on both sides of that argument. You know, some say we can't eat ourselves out of this problem. And others in Italy and around, Silvio's from Italy, are saying that we need to try. Jellyfish are a tricky fishery to develop because we really don't understand what makes them bloom and when we're going to find swarms of them. That said, there are places that are disturbed, and the Eastern Mediterranean is certainly very highly disturbed, where jellyfish seem to be much more prevalent and sort of consistently there. So, yeah, it's a big problem. One of the worst things I heard when I was doing research for this book was the fact that, you know, the way one of the big things that we should be doing is setting up these marine protected areas in the ocean, which are like national parks on land, you know, places where we say, okay, no fishing here.
Like reserves, right?
Right. And one of the great things about marine protected areas in our oceans is that there's these spillover effects because a lot of marine animals, almost all fish, produce way too many eggs that then can survive. Mm-hmm. What happens is you establish a marine protected area, the fish produce a ton of eggs, more than can survive within the area, so they spill out to the outside of that marine protected area, and they actually increase the fishing yield outside. So that's generally thought of as a very good thing.
Yeah.
But in the Mediterranean, what's happened is they've actually set up a nice network of marine protected areas, but what's happening is because of all the invasives that are establishing themselves in the Mediterranean, because the water is warming so much there, the invasives, which are aggressive anyway, are establishing themselves within those marine protective areas and out-competing the natives.
Wow.
So it's a pretty complicated situation. And, you know, I'd always assumed like marine protected areas, that's our answer. But in fact, we really need to understand a lot more about the ocean and its dynamics before we can say what the answers are. And they're going to be different in different places. It's a very complex ocean out there. And, part of the message of the book is we need to start paying attention to it because it's our health as well.
Kate says on Twitter, used to get stung all the time as a kid during the 1970s in Long Island Sound off Connecticut coast. She says not so bad to Lidween in St. Paul. Hi. Sounds like you have a story about a jellyfish.
Well, you just said that she was stung in Long Island. I was stung in Florida, and the problem was I was just a tourist back then. Then I started living there, but I didn't know you weren't supposed to go in the ocean in the fall and winter, and a bunch of tourists do that.
Right.
But, so anyway, I got stung by a man of war.
Ah.
I don't know
if they're called man of war because of that sting or not, but I will never to this day forget that sting. I was just a young kid, and it went right through my foot, right up through my whole body.
Oh, my gosh.
Almost paralyzing. And so I'll never I learned my lesson then. But the other thing, I had a quick question. Is it possible that they're increasing because of the fish that normally would predate on them are diminishing, and perhaps because of their sting, do they not have as many predators?
Yeah, okay. Lidwine, I think you addressed that a little earlier, Julie, about where we've overfished.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
We've overfished for sure. And we've done several other things to the environment that have increased their abundances, at least in some places. And I'm really sorry that you got stung by a Portuguese man of war. That's I've never been stung by one, but I know I talked to Diana Nyad, who swam. She was, you know, first person who swam from Cuba to the Florida Keys. And she was stung. She's been stung many times by those. And she told me it's like an out-of-body experience.
That woman has resilience and strength. I mean, just from the jellyfish stings, you know, to have survived that, let alone the physical strength that takes.
Yeah. And she said, you know, the thing that was dogging her, the thing that, because she tried, I think, four times to swim, to make that swim.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't the boredom and it wasn't the sheer strength it takes to swim for 50 hours or even like the rashes you get from seawater going down your throat and, you know, all over in your armpits. And it was the jellyfish that stopped her from making it. And, yeah, and it was often the Portuguese man-o-war. And it isn't named for its sting. It's named because it's actually a colony of jellyfish. It's in the Hydrozoan family, which is related. Most of the jellyfish that you look at are called Scyphozoa. That's kind of your typical jellyfish. This is kind of a cousin. It's still a jellyfish. And the Portuguese man-o-war is actually a colony. And it has sort of specialized individuals. Some of them just sting and some of them just eat and some of them just reproduce. And then some of them form this sail that sticks up above the water. And that's why it's named after the sailing boat called the Portuguese Man of War. So it's not the sting. It's this resemblance to a sailboat from, I don't know, I guess the 1600s or something like that.
Julie, I think we can hear your curiosity about science, especially about jellyfish in the conversation so far. But I really love this part of the memoir where you're asking yourself at different points in this jelly quest that you're on about why you're finding yourself obsessed with them. And one of the conclusions that you come to is your sense of curiosity and, I guess, intellectual adventure, right? It needed to return. You'd been raising little tiny kids and you'd felt like that part of you had been quashed a little bit. And this quest for jellies brought that back. Do I have that pretty much right?
Yeah, you do. You know, it's I was a scientist. I studied phytoplankton and using satellites to look at the ocean. And, you know, even though I did my PhD in it, you know, it didn't feel like something that I was really passionate about. I think I was on this academic path and there was structure to it. And then I got off the academic path and I was writing textbooks. And again, you know, my work was driven by editors who would tell me what to do. And then I stumbled onto this story of jellyfish and it became this sort of this thing that it was almost like my secret for a little while. I was, you know, I was like spending days like looking into the jellyfish literature and it was so intellectually stimulating for me. And then my data, not that I didn't love my kids and I don't love raising them and they're so fabulous, but there is a monotony to it. And this just became very, very exciting for me. And so I sort of started like planning family vacations so that we would go places where there would be a jellyfish scientist who I could talk to. And I would leave my husband with the kids and be like, I'll be back in a couple hours. And that went on for 5 years until I finally just claimed the story as my own. And I said, you know what, this is my thing. And I'm going to write a book about jellyfish and it's going to have my personal voice in it. And that's what happened. And actually, I guess I want to make a comment about that. You know, I read a lot of nonfiction and when I would finish a book, oftentimes I would be like, gosh, I could never write a book like that. And a lot of times it might have been written by like a man and it would be 10 chapters and it would be really, really good. But I just knew that I couldn't do that.
Mm.
And then one day I changed the inflection and I was like, I could never write a book like that, but I could write a book like this. And, you know, and so then I realized like in order to write this book about jellyfish, it wasn't going to be just 10 chapters and it wasn't going to just be science. It was going to have to interweave this sort of personal story. And that's when everything sort of came together for me.
Yeah, well, it works. So for listeners who have not had a chance to read the book, Julie writes, "Something that had been waiting deep inside me had been looking for the chance to climb to the surface and ask if there wasn't something more than granola bars and Go-Gurt." Yes, there are jellies. To the phones here to Sarah in Maple Grove. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for waiting.
You're welcome. I actually had for Julie a fact check question.
Good. Okay.
And then a possible theological reflection.
Perfect.
The fact check question first is it true that jellyfish can still sting someone after they have, quote unquote, died?
Yes, it is. And so if you do walk by a jellyfish on the beach, you should be cautious if you know, especially if you see it's that purple, you know, the blue, indigo, gorgeous man of war jellyfish. They wash up on the beaches here in Texas a lot, and you should definitely steer clear of that. Yes, the answer is yes, because that stinging cell is kind of, it's pressurized. And so if you walk, it doesn't need a muscle to deploy. So the jellyfish doesn't have to be alive. I guess that's maybe the way to answer the question.
Okay. And Sarah, I'm interested in the theological reflection. What is it?
Well, so I'm a Lutheran pastor by vocation. And when I heard this jellyfish fact, which I wasn't sure was true, so thank you, Julie, for the confirmation, it occurred to me that in my 14 years of being a Lutheran pastor, that my experience has been that that is also true of people, that their legacy after death can either be what we hope and desire is love and faith and positivity, but it can also be very much a sting. After death, and I know that's way far from jellyfish, but it just seemed like this kind of fun connection.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Sarah, I think you should have been part of the show. We could have gone into all the theological connections, but that's a really good point. Right.
You can leave
a legacy of goodness, or you can get your revenge, right? After death.
Yeah. I mean, it's true from my experience, not from my scientific experience or anything, but just from my life experience. I agree. It's maybe important that we think about that too. You know, what do we want our legacies to be?
Right.
Yeah.
From Twitter here, a listener says, "Stung by a man of war while studying abroad on the Great Barrier Reef, was collecting them from the beach in a bucket and slipped." And then Melissa says, "Husband was kiteboarding in Florida and fell into a gang of Portuguese man of war. We had to peel tentacles off of him." I think we've had some questions too. I thought that urine was a good, it calmed the sting of a jellyfish. I've heard that if you're on the beach, have somebody pee on you if you get stung.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Well, there's a famous Friends episode where like Joey pees on Rachel.
So, I didn't remember that.
But, yeah. So actually, when I was writing the book, there was a lot of disagreement about what you should do when there's a jellyfish sting. And since I've actually finished the book, the scientists have gotten together and they've come out with a very clear statement on what you should do. And this is the answer.
Okay.
You should use hot water and vinegar. And that seems to work the best on all stings, including the box jellyfish, including the Portuguese man of war. So pee is not really going to do much, except for that it is warm. So it has that, you know, it has that piece to it. But if you can find something warm or hot to put on the sting, and you should use a credit card or tweezers would be the best to just pull the tentacles off, get whatever remaining tentacles are on you off, and then hot water and vinegar are the two things that you should use.
We are going to close with a musician for whom a jellyfish is named. Wow, Julie,
yes.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Really great to have you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And this is Frank Zappa.
It is.
That's right. Frank Zappa has a jellyfish named for him, and the memoir is called Spineless, The Science of Jellyfish and the Art of Growing a Backbone, by Julie Burwald. You can read all about it on The Thread.
So bitchin'. Could you, like, just picture me in a, like, a leather teddy? Yeah, right. Hurt me. I'm sure, no way. He was, like, freaking me out. He called me a beastie. That's, like, he's totally blitzed. He goes,